You say you want a revolution. Well, you know.
What is going on, everybody? You're here another week. We've got the Rational Revolution. I am Mark Becker, your host. Thank you so much for joining us. Once again, if you missed last week, we had a really difficult discussion. It was something that I wasn't necessarily prepared for myself. We talked with Hua Yutek, award-winning author, about abusive, narcissistic-type relationships, and we shared some stories, and I had a four-day headache after that episode. But it was really something to behold. And you know, we talked about one of two people are in or have been in something like that. So if that was you, check it out. It's a really good discussion, and she is brilliant. All those episodes can be found on the Civic Media app, wherever you get your apps, along with all the other ones, including this one, where we welcome a dear old friend. Chris Alfheim joins us.
Hey, so excited.
Welcome back.
I am so stoked.
To the chair.
I'm so excited. I love this show. I love what you're doing with the show. You know I love me some Todd all day long.
Yes.
I mean, every now and then I just send a text saying, Marco.
And I don't respond.
No. It leaves me lonely. Lonely. I get it. You know, the world has moved on without me.
We still do the tributes, you know,
I love it. I love the concept of the show. I love that you are the perfect replacement because you continued that conversation. Again, this is conversation radio. It's not preaching. It's not anything. It's just let's talk and let's learn about something together. And I you've done a great job.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I think what's so neat about this is, you know, it started with, you know, Rational Revolution. It's not left or right. It's right and wrong. And it's something that, you know, we can always have those discussions. Right. And it doesn't matter, you know, where you lean. But speaking of where you lean, what have you been up to?
Oh, I've been busy.
How's your schedule?
My schedule's plump. Schedule's plump. Hearty.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, business is normal doing that. City business, as always. The city of Appleton is always a moving, fun place to be. Lots of great stuff going on.
Yeah.
So that keeps me busy. And then, you know, you throw in a little state Senate campaign and, you know, why
just
not?
A little one.
You know, you'd never, ever want your brain to be bored.
Yeah.
Mine's not.
Yeah.
Mine is definitely not. It keeps me busy.
So how is that going? I mean.
Oh, it's great. I mean, there's a lot to be said about being in a campaign, but my favorite thing about being involved, and it always has been, in politics, is the amount of information you learn on a daily basis.
Isn't that something?
It's just, you know, I read a book a long time ago in business that talked about the levels of competence and the degrees in which you learn things in really any situation. And the first level of competence is unconscious incompetence.
Yeah.
In essence, you don't know anything, but you're okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that most of us, it's a very good way of describing how we describe the level of knowledge we actually have in politics. We think we know, we feel good about what we know, but the reality is we really don't know. And the second level of competence is conscious incompetence.
Yeah.
When you realize, holy cow. You know, I think that's actually, that to me is a learned position.
Yeah.
The first level is where most people are, as I was. You think, you know, you get a little bit of information. You're not searching for it, but the little bit of information that you absorb, then you assume you are then educated on any conversation. And as soon as you reach out beyond and you start listening or learning from a different source and deeper sources, you soon realize how little you know.
Oh, yeah.
And then the job begins.
Yeah.
And I think that in the last 2.5 years, that's where I've been, in realizing that now to get to the point of conscious competence, it's work. It's being uncomfortable. It's listening to all sides of different issues, realizing there's positive and negative consequences to every decision that's made. And, you know, the ultimate goal would to get to the unconscious competent level. I don't know if you ever get there in politics because there's always something to learn.
Yeah.
And so I enjoy that thoroughly. My body may be tired because, you know, right now it's about a six and a half day a week opportunity. But my brain is very satisfied because I feel that I'm being a better human on a daily basis because I know more.
Yeah, it's really interesting. When I ran for county board, I was coming off of being the chairman of the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I was conservative, and the things I ran on was, you know, of course, hold the line on taxes and all this
stuff. Cut spending.
Cut spending. And
reduce the debt.
0.5% sales tax is the devil. And then I was elected, and then I got into office, and I started meeting with the people from the Brown County Library and child support and health and human services.
Right.
And in every one of those meetings, I left feeling so humbled.
Yeah.
Because you could really feel the weight of need in the community. I had no idea.
No
was there.
Idea.
And I'm like,
no
oh
idea.
My God.
And absolutely
then,
true.
Right. And then you sit down with the county executive, who's a conservative himself, who ran a really good ship, and you know, all the waste, fraud, it's not there.
Nope.
You know?
Everybody thinks there's so much waste.
Right.
And, you know, again, and I was there too. That's what you hear, right? And maybe there are times where
things
could be slimmed down a little. Don't get me wrong. I mean, there are always examples of things.
Right.
But nope, we have no concept.
None.
Concept how thin, how lean every organization in a municipality, town, a county are working. And all they're trying to do is to provide for their residents what they promise they will.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in a meeting,
and what they deserve.
I was in a meeting the other night, and a lovely lady from the community was speaking up against, I don't know if it was ARPA funds or what it was, but she was speaking basically that we need to put all of our money into infrastructure, into roads, into basically roads, what she wanted. And what she was arguing for is that we would not use money towards mental health.
Oh, geez.
And early childhood and all of these nonprofits that we were supporting with our ARPA dollars for the community who are still recovering.
Yeah.
And again, this is a good woman. She's trying to do good things. But I look at it as our community base, our children are our community infrastructure.
Right.
They are the building blocks of who we will be in the future.
Oh, yeah.
And it's amazing how many people will have the comment about, well, you know, they should do this or they should do that. You know what? We can't change family dynamics that exist. It's not something that you and I can do or government, but we can try and impact the next generation coming out. So if a child is not given the resources they need to really grow into who we hope they will be in the community, if we as a community don't lean in and help give those steps, give them a little bit of a ramp into success, they won't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a generational issue. So investing a dollar on the front end in our societal infrastructure is about saving those dollars in the long run. That's a fiscal choice.
Mm-hmm.
But without the information and realizing the need that exists, without getting out from our suburban backyards or our comfortable vehicles, whatever that may be, unless you put yourself into the situation where 40% of our population actually lives.
Yeah.
That's what people don't realize.
Yep.
40%. This is an amazing stat. I met with the superintendent of Appleton Public Schools. 40% of the families in the Appleton School District qualify for free lunches. 40%. Now, to qualify for free lunches, you have to have a family of four making less than about $36,000 a year. A family of four.
Mm-hmm.
That's 40%. And I know in Appleton, Neenah, Menasha, Oshkosh, which is the 18th Senate District, that is a consistent number.
Yeah.
Especially in Menasha and Oshkosh, 40%. So we must realize that investing in people is just as important as assuring we have clean water and air, which is another issue we could talk about, but we don't have to. It's a big deal. So again, learning, being humble enough to acknowledge that thoughts that you had and opinions you had in the past were perhaps not based on all of the information and then being bold enough to go search for more information to see if you should be adjusting or strengthening your views. Mm-hmm. That's who I try to be as a servant of the government. This is not my lifelong dream,
right.
But I think that this is the mindset that people are looking for now in truthfully looking at issues from all sides and then making the best decisions we can moving forward.
I think one of the things that's been interesting in doing this radio show too has been talking to the people that are kind of in that mindset too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would put the first guest, I call them Patient Zero, was Charlie Sykes.
Yeah.
And in that episode I said, you know, you've really stayed true to, you know, who you are. And he said, no, I haven't. You know, and he said, I look back at some of the things that he said on his radio show, and he said that he's kind of embarrassed because, yeah, you know, he has grown and seen different things and all of that. And I think it takes a big person to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And for everything and all the changes that have been going on with the conservative sect and that side, to see some of those people that once were and are now not.
Yeah.
Has been really encouraging. And we talk about Reed Ribble. He's not a Republican anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, he still has views that maybe we might not always agree,
right,
on everything, but he's a really good and decent human.
Absolutely.
And he has evolved on some things,
yeah,
too.
Without question. Without question. I think that if we are not, and I think that's a great mirror check. You know, if,
yeah,
you can look in the mirror and say, do I have the exact same thoughts?
Yeah.
Do I have the exact same opinions as I had 4 years ago, 2 years ago, 10 years ago, then I would challenge, you probably need to step outside of whatever circle you've been in to see what else is out there.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's impossible. It's impossible to be on a daily basis and not have more information added in that would allow you to adjust slightly.
Right.
Again, maybe it strengthens your view. But it's the willingness to be uncomfortable. And it's uncomfortable when we put ourselves in a situation that we're not used to, whether it's learning information or just being somewhere. And I don't look at that as a fault of people. I think it's just an unawareness.
Mm.
I mean, I grew up in a small town. We weren't exposed to things. Now, there isn't a racial bone in my family's anywhere. There's just not. We're kind, good Central Wisconsin people. But the reality is we didn't know any African American people. We didn't know any Asian people. We didn't know any Muslim people. We certainly didn't know any gay people. And it wasn't that we weren't looking for them or wouldn't have been kind. We just didn't have any. So there was lack of exposure, right? We didn't live downtown. We didn't go downtown. So you only know what you know until you challenge yourself to know more.
Right.
And then you start to learn from that level of experience.
Well, we're going to learn some more on the other side of the break here with Chris Alf. I'm on the Rational Revolution. We'll see you in a little bit. Rational Revolution here, Mark Becker, and oh my God, Chris Alpine.
What's
back.
Up? What's up? I've missed you all.
Music is the same.
I know it is. I like it. It makes me happy. You see me a little wiggling in my chair?
Yeah.
Don't put that on video.
No, that's all good.
Oh, I've got pictures.
Oh man, on the other side of the break, we were just talking about, you know, growing up and knowing what you know and not knowing what you know. And I remember the first time you were talking about BIPOC or people that are gay or that are black, or, you know, I remember the first time where we had a family that was African-American that came for dinner. It was the King family. They went to our church and it was like, you know, there's not a racial bone in my body. My wife is black, but it was, you know, it's like, okay, they are not, we are different,
mm-hmm,
you know? And it was so cool because we went outside and played football and we had fun. We laughed and all this other stuff. And not once did we say, you know, have any questions about,
right,
you know.
Right.
But then I think, you know, in hindsight, I'm someone that is always wanting to know.
Yep.
And, you know, it's been really interesting, even over the last, maybe since 2020 and some of the George Floyd stuff that has happened and the protests. And I've really started talking to my wife about, like, what was that like? Because she was born in Los Angeles.
Okay.
And came to town. I think it was Rodney King that kind of, you know. And she grew up in a small town. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, it was tough because she was never, because she's black and white. And she's like, I was never black enough and I was never white enough.
Yeah.
And she, you know, and so to hear some of those, I'm always curious and always trying to learn so I can become better, you know, and like more accepting, more knowledgeable, more worldly.
You know, it's interesting how few people have, again, God bless them, because they're not intentionally doing anything. But it's amazing how many people, including ourselves, who are rarely, if ever, put in a situation of truly being a minority.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll give you an example. I went in 2022, I was campaigning, and there was a large event down in Oshkosh. I believe it was their annual, the Hmong annual festival. Mm. And I was down there. And it's hard to explain what it's like. It's hard to explain what it's like when you're the only one who's struggling with communication. Mm. When you're the only one who can't read the signs. You have no idea what's going on. You have no one that you can naturally say, hey, how's it going?
Right.
It's a very, very lonely place and a scary place. And I obviously am not, you know, there's no victimization here. My point is that it's hard to empathize with people that are dealing with isolation or being a minority if you've never truly experienced being that one person in the room that doesn't look like everybody else.
Yeah.
And that's a weak example of it. But my point is we have to try to understand, again, in the schools. Do you know that there are 16 different languages that are spoken in the Appleton School District?
No kidding.
16.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. I mean, we can have a conversation about vouchers and what it means, but they refer to it as newcomers. Newcomers. Okay. So 16 different languages. Imagine if you're coming in and you're coming into a community that is tremendously majority English Caucasian.
Right.
And you're speaking a language that almost no one in the city speaks. Right. Now think about it from the point of what is our job as a school district. It's to give every child the opportunity to find success and learn. Mm-hmm. So at public school, that's their obligation and their opportunity. So we now have so many people. The cost of ensuring that our entire society gets the chance to take a step forward is immense. I'm going to hit on schools just a second. Or just for a minute, the voucher system, right? I have no problem. I went to private school for, I think, until I was in fourth grade. Then I transferred out to public. But the voucher system, a lot of the stuff that I've learned, here's an example. Everybody receives in the public school system like a reimbursement of about $11,500. That's what per head is referred to. Mm-hmm. If someone in that $11,500, you have the majority of the kids, it probably only costs $4,000 to $5,000 to actually house them in a school to take care of them. The rest of them are far more than that. In the voucher system, it is normal that the people that are being pulled or moving over to the private schools tend to be in that normal category, right?
Right.
So they are the $4,000 to $5,000 students. The private school is then reimbursed at $13,500 for those kids. That's just the way the system works. Meanwhile, in the public school system, again, our obligation is to fulfill that dream of education. There's one single child, this is just one example, coming into 4K next year. She needs a full-time one-on-one nurse to be in school. In addition to the normal education costs, the public schools will have to invest $90,000 just to provide the nurse that is necessary to make sure that child is okay as they attempt to learn. My point is, I don't think people realize that.
No.
The per pupil is not an accurate dollar amount. It's an average. And when you look at the voucher system, if you're pulling out all of the kids that it only costs $4,000 to $5,000 to teach, giving away $13,000 to the private school, we're now leaving all of the kids that need a little bit more that the private school has no interest in or the people don't know how to get there, that are costing far more than $11,000. Mm-hmm. That's why we have a crisis. I'm not an anti-voucher person. I'm saying make it a fair system, because our obligation is to teach everyone. That's what public school does. Private school doesn't have to do that.
No.
So you either have to make it a fair system, or you have to properly compensate so that we can do our job as promised in the Wisconsin Constitution, which is to provide that opportunity to learn. These are the details that people don't know. We think it's so black and white. Well, you should be able to go tax dollars. It's the same. No, it's not. And until you have all of the information, your opinion will be based on only the small amount that you know. We must do better at learning and be willing to accept information that we weren't aware of, and then be bold enough to say, I was wrong. We need to change it.
Yeah, and we're talking here with Chris Alpha. I mean, I'm gonna say the thing. I look at it as, I'm not a huge fan of vouchers. I think that, you know, people go to private school that is an elective thing. And I would not send my kids to private school. And nothing against private school, but what I believe is, if you are a teacher, you're coming out of college with a teaching degree, you want to go where the pay is the best, where the benefits are the best, and where your job is protected the most. And let's face it, that is not in a private school.
Right.
So you're going to send your kids to private school. The quality of education they're going to get is going to be a little bit lower, just because of those facts. And, you know, they're good schools, but I don't think children will get the level of education that they will get at a public school.
Yeah, I'm not going to, because there's so many schools. I'm not going to go there.
You can't, because you know.
Well, I think it's wrong to assume that they're not. However, what's true is that we do know there isn't the level of accountability.
100%.
We do know there's not the level of transparency. So it's hard to judge when you're not allowed to read any data.
Right.
I think that's a fair enough statement.
Right. Hey, it's the Beatles coming together, as we're doing here on the Rational Revolution.
Come
Mark Becker
together.
And Chris Alpine. That was awesome. We'll have more singing on the way on the other side of the break. Now, I don't know the words to this song, Chris Alfheim, so I think you gotta take it away here.
I don't think I know this song.
I don't know this song either.
It sounds good.
It's nice. Oh, wait, no, this is the same song.
We're lame. We should have known this. I still don't know the words. Give me a karaoke screen, I'm in.
Yeah, right? No kidding. We're at Rational Revolution. Mark Becker's here with
I guess we're gonna have one of those installed for the next time she's here.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yes. It's my first fundraiser. We're actually doing a karaoke party. I'm not exaggerating.
I'm there.
It's going to be awesome. You're going to come on down. Come on.
I'd tear the place down. Absolutely.
As long as you and I can sing, I Got You, Babe, I'm in.
Oh, okay.
All day long. But can you be Sunny so you get down on your knees, be real short?
I'd rather be Cher.
That's weird.
You're shorter than me, so you would be Sunny.
Well, not if you get down on your knees and, you know, put your knees on your shoes. You look like a little short guy. Do you have a long wig I can borrow?
Ironically, no. Oh. I don't.
Right, well, let's work on it. It would be fun. You're welcome to come.
So I want to, so much on this show since I've kind of started is trying to assess where we are politically, why we got here, because that's been a topic that's really fascinated me. Charlie Sykes talked a lot about it. Mike Madrid was brilliant when he talked about, you know, because he was a founder of the Lincoln Project. And so he had intimate knowledge of that. But I think what I want to talk about here with you is you are in a position where you could really be rebuilding Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because we have an opportunity for the first time in over a decade to actually bring representative democracy back to the people of Wisconsin.
Right.
There's a lot of healing that we have to do as a state.
Yeah.
Because for so long, it has been a one-party rule if we didn't have the governor's mansion. And one side did everything.
Yep.
What does it look like going forward?
Well, I've made this comment multiple times to people in Madison that I believe my job, getting down there, is going to be to ask both sides to realize it's a new day.
Yeah.
I mean, the reality is you're going to have the Republican legislature that is angry because they will, right, wrong, or otherwise, they feel at this point that they have been robbed of their right.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm not going, you know how I feel on it, but yeah, that's how they feel. That's a real feeling. Then you have the left, who has been literally locked in a cage, and they don't even get to bring out, they don't even get to bring anything to committee.
Right.
I mean, that's a fact.
Oh, yeah, at least not Grass was talking
right?
about
it's
that.
A fact. Yeah. These aren't opinions. So the reality is that the Democrats have a well-earned chip on their shoulder.
Oh, yeah.
They're mad. They've been angry, and there's almost, for many, especially those that have been fighting very hard just to protect the veto, they're putting in twice as, if not three times, much more time down there because of it.
Talk about that. Why?
Well,
I know why, but yeah, people don't realize this.
No. So reality is all of the elected officials should be doing the same job. It should be equally weighted, right? So there are committees, there are meetings, they're on the floor. But when you have a super majority, when one side has this two-thirds vote, then every vote that could be called at any given time, all of those on the opposite side must be present, which means they are literally having to camp out for twice to three times more time in Madison than they should have to, because out of threat that the majority will pop something onto the table. So they have to be there. It's legitimately it's just not right.
Correct.
Again, a supermajority, in my opinion, just never should happen. Okay. I am a fan of balance. I'm a fan of both parties have their job. One is to want what's best for people. One is to keep an eye out for the economy and keep things on the rails from a budget. That's theoretically what we're supposed to be doing. And it's gotten away from that.
Right.
So I believe my job is to get down there and to ask both sides to let the grudge go. Because we have to be able to get past the emotion of what's gone on to the reality of where we are. And where we are is we have issues. We have issues that most people agree on, and yet we have not been able to move forward on in Madison because of the stances that we have. Both sides are going to have to try very hard to walk away from that emotion to get back to doing the business. And I'll tell you, I think as a good sign in what the maps are doing, because people question whether it's going to work. In the way that it's been in the last 10 years, whatever interest party, right? So if it's the realtors, if it's manufacturing, if it's labor, whatever that is, they have very much been on opposite sides. So all of certain industries have stayed on the Republican side. They have the power, all the labor, and this, that, on the other. In today's world, and the difference between this campaign and the last one, you have industry groups coming from both sides.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming from both sides because they realize relationships are going to have to be made. Now, that doesn't mean their goal is to pick a winner. Their job is to share information that's important to whatever they represent.
Right.
And when you don't have to talk to both sides, there's never going to be an air of agreeance. When maps are redrawn where there's balance, there's competitive nature to it, then if you want to get something done, you're going to have to prove it to both sides. You're going to have to find a balance somewhere that says this is what, this is why, this is how. And I've said to multiple groups already, if you come to my table, my expectation is that you tell me what you want and why, and then you're going to tell me why the other side won't want it. Tell me what the objection is on the front end. Because if you have a conversation where you know all of the information, you then can actually try and make some strides forward. That's not the way government has worked in Wisconsin, because there hasn't ever been conversations on both sides. They don't need to listen to one another because it isn't necessary. It will be necessary in the future because of these maps.
So how do you go about, you know, I know you, and I think... We know how we know each other from a long time ago, and now we reconnected. I know your expertise, and I trust that. How do you go down to Madison and meet with, you know, a senator that's been there since Act 10.
Sure.
And has seen what has happened and has been through the last decade of division and just like Eric Genrich said, he got his teeth kicked in every day.
Yeah.
How do you talk to that person and say, hey, let's put it aside? And they're like, well, shut up, rookie. What the hell do you know?
Yeah.
How do you get over that?
Well, first, I think that my job is to be not intimidated, right? Yeah. I mean, that's a natural thing for people. Because I've been doing the advocacy thing for so long in Madison and D.C., I know that everybody that's in these positions, they're just people.
Right.
They're people trying to do good. Now, there may be different opinions on how to go about
good.
That,
yeah, right.
But the bottom line is they're people. And so one, with respect, you have to let them know, I don't care what side they're on, that there is respect there. Yeah. Even, you know, my opponent from the last election, Senator Rachel Cabral-Guerrero, I was in her office 3 times in the year after I lost, and I refer to her as Senator. I am polite. I am kind because she is a senator. She earned it.
Right.
So I think having some humility to know, number one, be respectful because everyone down there is doing very good, hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, not being afraid to say, I have expertise here. And what I see is this. And being just beholden to the concept of moving forward. And my job oftentimes is to connect the dots, even on the financial literacy. You know, we worked very hard for financial literacy in Madison. We finally got that bill signed. That was a contentious discussion for 10 years. And in the end, there was Republican support for it. And the Democrats were not convinced it was the greatest choice. And I testified that it was necessary to move past whatever sticking point it was. Money exists to do it. Make it happen. And they all came together to do that. But there's good. We have to get past the air of no because, or you're not going to do this, so therefore we're not going to do that. That has to come to an end. And I think, you know, there's many issues that's been the case. If we're not going to get this, then we're not going to do that. There's no moving forward. We are all going to be held accountable down there. And everyone knows that. Everyone knows that almost all of our positions, you can be voted out. You can be if you aren't accountable to your people. And I think that's going to cause people to realize that you can't always stand on the far edge of your party on every decision.
Right.
We can't always get what we want. I had a group, an interview the other day, and they asked me if I would be advocating for large change or incremental. And my response was, there will always be someone that is willing, there will always be people that are willing to push for the moon. My job is going to be to reach to the other side and help them understand why moving towards that answer is actually good for both sides.
Yeah.
Everybody has to have a role in that.
Right.
There will always be somebody pulling on the far edge. And I think what the Wisconsin people want are people that are looking at it saying, yes, I believe. I believe that's right. But here's where we are today. And in today's situation, we can take 2 of those steps, but we're not going to get all 5.
Yeah.
But 2 is what people are looking for. Let's get the 2 because we haven't had any in so long.
Right. We're talking with Chris Alfheim here. And I think, you know, it's do you want big change or do you want incremental? Yes. You know, because
let's just have some change for crying out loud.
Because for so long it has been so tilted to one side. So just to get back to the center,
right,
you have to have monumental change.
It's funny that nobody's happy.
No. It's not extreme.
No, it's funny and nobody's happy because we know the Democrats aren't happy because they can't even walk in a straight line. I mean, they're not allowed to do anything.
Right.
But the Republicans aren't happy either.
Right.
Which is, we have to be able to get to the point where bills coming up to the governor's desk, you know, where it's consensus that says this is the right answer for the people.
Right.
There's got to be in this world a lot of answers that 65% of the state agrees on that we should be able to move forward on and be excited to do so. My expectation is that we start finding those solutions on the front end, rather than bills landing on the governor's desk that he's vetoing, whether it's the right answer, whether it's out of spite, I don't care. He shouldn't be in the position to have to do that.
Right.
Because if the bills being brought to him are actually crafted with cooperation, everybody's going to be a little irritated that they didn't get everything they wanted. But that's the way that's the way negotiation works.
Right.
Both parties will not get everything they want, but neither party is going to walk away being kicked in the teeth. That's where people want us to go. That's where we have been. Again, checks and balances means you don't let anybody swing too far at any given time, but common sense moves you forward in a good direction.
Yeah, I think it would be so cool to have state government work with good faith and respect.
Wouldn't it be awesome if the governor, and again, this isn't our reality today, but wouldn't it be awesome if the governor on a biweekly basis had the leadership of both houses walk in his office, sit down at the conference table and say, what do we have cooking?
I believe Tommy Thompson did that.
Right?
Yeah.
I hope that we can get back to that point where civilized colleagues sit around a table representing their state and their constituents, which, by the way, almost none of us are represented. None of us are represented 100% by one side or the other.
Right.
So if we sit in a civil way as colleagues could sit around one conference table and say, all right, we're bringing this up. Here's our contentious point. We're bringing this up. I think we're going to be able to get through on that. Yeah. So what shows up on the governor's desk, you know, has been worked through thoughtfully in order to minimize the negative consequences, maximize the positive rewards, and move forward. That's what Wisconsin people want. And that's what I am have every intention of walking down in Madison, because it's rational. It's the way that we want to be working. It's the way civilized adults expect to work together. I don't know why we wouldn't expect anything less.
Yeah. And I think, you know, this is why, in my opinion, so many of the old guard from one side who has had it that way, has it had it the opposite way for so long, need to go.
Well, because I think it's a fine line, though, because I think there's a lot of traditional conservatives in Madison that have left because it has not been that way.
Yeah.
I think that the sad part is that there are some really good, rational Republicans.
Rob Coles.
Yep. That are leaving because they want to do business the way that it was, which is collegial, work forward together.
No,
those are the good people. Yeah. And they're leaving, which means we're now left with more radical, loud people as opposed to colleagues.
Right, right. It's the best and the brightest. Hey, we're going to talk to the best and the brightest here on the other side of the break.
Todd, we're going to talk to Todd.
Yeah. We'll see you back in a little bit here on the Rational Revolution.
You tell me that it's evolution. Well, you know, we all want. But when you talk about destruction, all I can tell you is, brother, you have to wait.
All right.
I gotcha.
There we go. Chris Alpine's on the other mic here.
Hello.
Yes, Mark Becker. Rational Revolution. This feels good. This is a good one. I have so many questions.
You're running out of time.
I know. We'll have to have you back again because this is really cool. Because it's interesting to see, you know, what you're going through, and where you are on the front lines of, no matter who is in power, a seismic shift in how the state is governed.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're really on those the reconstruction, I guess, of our democracy. And so, like, I know people are so focused on the campaign, and your head is down, and you're just hustling. Are there any talks about, like, okay, y'all, November 6th, what do we do?
No, honestly. No. Every conversation that I've had, and I've spent a reasonable amount of time in Madison, is all about getting there.
Okay.
And learning about the issues that are out there. And again, this time around, I'm getting to hear from different groups that realize, again, it's important to create relationships and share information with people they didn't have to before. So the amount of industry groups that are coming to me now to introduce themselves and what is important to them is astounding. I think that there's a reality that everybody knows once we get to November, things will be different. Whatever the numbers shake out to be, it's going to be different.
Yeah.
That's the real story. I mean, in the Senate, there's really only four seats that the Democrats have the opportunity to flip. The 18th is considered the number one. My seat is the number one seat. It must be flipped. But that's the conversation right now. We're not busy thinking through strategy of the if, then what. Our job right now is to be good stewards of the opportunity.
Yeah.
And work hard and make sure people understand who we are and why we're doing it and what they can expect from us when we get down there. I wish in a perfect world that we didn't have to deal with all the money that we do. I mean, I know my poor friends and network are getting emails and it's sad, but until we actually elect people across the board, including in DC, that agree that we have to fix that money problem, get it out, it's the game that the rules are played. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, all we do right now as candidates is introduce ourselves to strangers, to friends, to listen to organizations, to understand what they're trying to do and for whom, and work our way at being the best version of a candidate that we can be, so that if that does happen, if we're so blessed as to win that opportunity, then we are as well balanced information wise and prepared to do the job as we can.
It was, I think it was when I got to spend some time with Russ Feingold at his last election, and it was really an intimate discussion. And I asked him, you know, what was it like? I think it was 92, where he like famously spray painted his garage and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you won, and this was exactly how I felt when I won. And he said it was just elation, but then it hit you. Oh my God.
Pure panic.
Now I have to. Yeah. Holy crap.
That's that moment of conscious incompetence.
Right.
Just like that.
Right. And so that's where I was like, okay, well, are you preparing for any of that? So, but I want to talk about the 18th.
Mm-hmm.
It's critically important for you, obviously, and for the Senate. But it's one of those big turnout districts that Senator Baldwin needs and frankly Joe Biden needs.
No doubt.
So how is that?
Yeah, I mean, there's always a reality.
Play, you know?
One of the concerns that every state race has is what's happening above you, because you can't control it.
You got to run up the score, you know?
Yeah, I mean, all you can do is do the best you can to get people to know who you are and the importance of every name on the ballot, and hope and pray that they go from the top and there's nothing chaotic going on and they carry it all the way to the bottom.
Yeah.
Which is not the case. A lot of people drop off and you lose numbers. So it's important for everybody to know, in my opinion, from the bottom up, people, the closer the elected official is to your home, the more you should be paying attention,
mm-hmm.
right? Your city local government is the one making those decisions on your sidewalk and your road. Your state legislature is the one that is going to answer the phone and help you out when something goes wrong. Your state senate is there to look at strategy to the next level up. Then you get, you know, you go up and up and up. But the down ballot candidates are the ones who literally impact your backyard the most. And yet they're the most underutilized tool that we have. So there's so much that we have to look at. My opinion, the 18th district is extremely important. It's extremely important in the grand scheme of Wisconsin, because we're big. We have four major municipalities. We have Menasha, Needham, Oshkosh, and Appleton. We have four major school districts. We have some of the most amazing industry giants in our backyard. We have universities. We have tech schools. We have everything. We are a wonderful microcosm of what an economy and a community should look like. You can't go into that not having any clue as to how government works. You can't go into that only thinking for the good of industry and not the people.
Right.
You can't go into that not realizing the nuts and bolts that goes on into running a school district and how to raise our children to be good members and try to retain them.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be well-rounded, well-balanced, with some knowledge of how the actual government world works in order to maximize who we are and bring the Valley together as a wonderful, wonderful powerhouse in the state of Wisconsin.
So we have like a minute left here, and I know we're going to have you back. Because this is fascinating. So how What do you think is going to happen? You know, do you think the Senate goes left? Do you think
the Senate won't. I mean, the Senate, I believe, will flip 4 seats,
okay.
But they won't have a chance at the majority for another 2 years because of the staggered cycles.
Got it.
I think the Assembly has a great chance to flip to the majority. I keep my head down and stay in my lane, so I'm not driving strategy, but I do know that there is far more strategy involved in the Democratic Party than there ever has been in terms to working together to accomplish the goals, which I think is a beautiful thing.
What is so far the craziest thing that's happened on the campaign trail? The thing that goes, oh my God, whoa.
I got invited to the White House.
What?
Yeah, I did. I was about to do donor calls. I look at my phone and there's an email from the president and Mrs. Biden invite you to the White House for the National Pride event. And I thought it was a scam. I kept on looking at it. Here was the real deal. So I'm going
That's
to Washington.
That's a hell of a way to celebrate Pride Month.
I'm so excited.
That's awesome. Chris Elfheim, thank you so much for hanging out with us. We got to do this again.
I love being here anytime.
Take it away. Bobby McGee.
Just for rain.
Thanks, everybody.
Rode us all the way to New Orleans. I love this song. I pulled